ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। Principle, all the Upanishads explains that only. What? Brahma Satyam, Jagat Mithya, Jiva, Brahmaiva na Paraha. Brahman alone is real. This Jagat is Mithya. Brahma Satyam, Jagat Mithya. Jivo, Brahmaiva na Paraha. Jiva is none other than Brahman. what this Upanishad is about. So Upanishad itself means, like we said, giving you the Nishaya Jnanam about the Atma, which is the closest to you, and removes the samsara. All these unnecessary samsara that we have created for ourselves, those things will be removed. This is called Upanishad. So in this Upanishad, in the beginning, he emphasized on renunciation. Renunciation is the prerequisite to be able to gain the knowledge. Some level of vairagyam should be there. Vairagya siddhi should be there. Should have some level of vairagya for you to be able to sit and study. Otherwise, not possible. Very difficult. Very, very difficult. You will be very much preoccupied. See, one day in a week, have to, for about 1 hour, 15 minutes, you find it sometimes so difficult to be consistent. What is it? It is nothing but our mind. He can give so many reasons. You are lesser samsara, you have more samsara. Who said that? Actually, he wants to say this very often. When, before he started the ashram, Prasad, he, his mother, his wife, his mother and his daughter. Of course, later on his daughter was also married. So then it was just he, his wife and his mother. Once he started the ashram, in the first batch, there were only about 8 or 9 students. And I belonged to the second batch, so we were like hardly 15 people. Now in the ashram, if you go, there are like 60-70 students, and then there are guests who come on a regular basis, the students' parents and this and that, all put together, and then servants who work there and all that. Approximately, if you go in the campus, there are like, 100 people on a daily basis. The lowest number is 70. So, you have so much of samsara, worse than being a grahastha. So, renunciation is means vairagya, not giving up anything, but vairagya for jnanam. But if you do not have that vairagyam to study that jnanam, to study, reflect, meditate and all that, okay, nothing wrong in that. You still have a lot of desires. You are an active category of a person. You require expression in this world. So you need an environment for expression. Even in, if you see in our own case also. Initially there was so much of enthusiasm to talk and all that. So much, okay, anybody inviting, come and talk. Go immediately, go and talk and that. Not that you don't have that enthusiasm. No, you say, yeah, only people who are really interested, let's talk. And that also, if they say, some excuse, okay, no problem. Not because we are hating talking, but the mind slowly evolves beyond action. So, and wants to dwell upon certain higher realms in life. This happens to everybody, not exclusive to somebody. So, through karma only we need to evolve. That's why most of us belong to this category here. We need to perform action. Karma Pradhana Ashrama is more suitable for us. Not Jnana Pradhana Ashrama. Even 1 hour class in once in a week, okay for us. And maximum, if you want to stretch it, every day 1 hour I'll study at home also. That's all first. This much commitment, Nidhesakta. But beyond this, please don't ask. But if you go to an ashram, you want to dedicate yourself fully, study, reflect, then it is different. It is, fully dedicated for that kind of a pursuit. So, if you are already having vairagya, you are into an ashrama which is jnana pradhana ashrama. If not, what you have to do, Upanishad says, do karma. Do karma means what? Do your obligatory duties without attachment, dedication for a higher goal, and keep doing for chitta shuddhi. So when you continue doing that, then you evolve. Then there will come a time where you would have sufficient vairagya, you'll be able to sit and study, reflect and all that. You're not unnecessarily perturbed by the invitations you've got. Now, situation is, if somebody has not invited you for their family wedding or something, you are agitated. And from that level, you go to a level where, okay, they didn't invite, no problem. Okay, they invited. Chalo, I'll go see them, bless them and come. There comes another time, okay, I'll go and bless. But now I have some other priorities because of which I may not be able to personally go and bless them. And from here I will bless them, I will, you know, sincerely pray for them, but I will not be able to go because I have other commitments, higher commitments. So your mind has to mature. Somebody is not able to say that. See, even in cricket, you see what happens. Different players at different times. We are not saying who's right, who's wrong. What one is able to do comfortably. For example, some player's wife, when they are pregnant and they are delivering the child, the player wants to take off. He applies for that and then he goes and he will be with his wife. Another player says, no, it's okay. She's taken care of. He makes all the arrangements. And then she says, no, I am on certain duty doing to my country. So I will be there. So this guy is able to be comfortably able to do this. Other person will be comfortable only if he does that. There is nothing wrong in both. You understand? But somebody is able to do this, somebody is not able to do this. That's okay. So each one has to function according to their level. So that's all the Upanishad thing. If you are not in renunciation, go to karma. But if you are not doing both, that means you are living a life of killing your atma, suicidal. You are doing nothing to go towards the self. You are leading a life where you are completely involved and indulging in your senses. That is what he calls this Asurya Namate Loka Andena Tamasa. Asurya, interpreted as Asuhu Ramante Iti Asurya, means one who revels in Asu. Asu means prana, you know, living life. For what you want to live, Kau Pio Majakaru. Eat, drink, enjoy. That's majority of people's life is only this. Kau Pio Majakaru. That is called, those kind of people are suicidal. Because what has happened is, they are living life only to fulfill the sensual appetite. Nothing more, nothing less. So they are not going to kindle the awareness from within and get to be Brahma. So they want to live fulfilling their sense, appetite, likes and dislikes. That's all. That's called suicidal lifestyle. So then if you want to reach Brahman, then there are certain, the goal of evolution is discussed. What is the goal? You cannot explain that goal. It is inexplicable. So that goal which is inexplicable, it just gives some pointers for the mind to be inspired and keep itself in that kind of a frequency. So he gives various pointers. And then he gives the benefit of reaching that goal. You know, what happens? Oneness happens. We'll start seeing the same self reflected in all beings and all beings in that self. You'll have that universal love. And once you have that, once you reach that level, you know, all your delusion and everything is gone. He says, kashoka kaha moha. Kaha moha kashoka. Where is moha for him or her, or where is shoka? No delusion, no grief, nothing. But the delusion is what? To believe that I am this body. And once I believe that I am this body, then the parents from whom this body came, I am attached to. The siblings who came from the very same parents I'm attached to. Then the children who are born from this body I'm attached to. Then the wife who was helpful in me producing those children I'm attached to. You know, so. And then their relatives, their parents, their thing, that thing. Finally, it's all bodily connected relations. These are all delusions. Similarly, emotional level. I believe that I am this small individual. Then I have samsara according to it. So all these are delusions. And once I'm attached, then there will be grief. Because the moment you are attached, grief will be there. See, when you buy a car from the shop, before you have taken possession, if something happened to that car, you say, scratches dikh rahe, I don't want this car. You know, you change it. I am not taking this car. So you have not taken the possession. But once you take the possession, and then if there is a small scratch, you almost end up in ICU because of your attachment. Because of your attachment to the object, you go into shoka. So shoka comes where there is raga. Raga comes where there is moha. You know, and moha is gone because you know the atma. Once you know the atma, thereafter there is no moha, no nothing, and therefore no attachment. No, thereafter there is no shoka. And that Brahman, which is all pervading, is beyond the causal, subtle and gross body. It is shining. It is, it doesn't require any other knowledge to make it known. It itself is all knowing and it is self-existent. All these pointers we saw. It's the Ishvara that by assigning various duties to various devatas controls and governs this world. So our goal is to get back to Brahman. See, why we say you got to expose your children to Shastra. You know, recently, I think I posted that in our group also. There's this YouTube channel called Advaita Academy. They invited me to come and give a talk. They're celebrating this 1 month period from 17th May to 16th June. Because the Shankara Jayanti is there on the particular birthday. So they're celebrating this 1 month as a Shankara Jayanti global festival of, Advaita. So there, they invited to come and talk on the topic Vedanta and youth. Youth, when you say, what they need is direction. In fact, our life will become instantly better the moment you get clarity. Problem is, what to do, we don't know. Then we think, if we increase our wealth, we'll be fine. Then after increasing the wealth, suddenly we need somebody or the other to talk to. To kya kare yaar, thoda sa contact, increase kar lo. Okay, join this group, that group, all kinds of group, you know, so that we can say, I know them, they know me. The end of the day, we don't know what to do. That is the truth. And we are going on meandering. We think, oh, if life is too short, before I die, I must see many things. I must see this Niagara Falls, and I must see that, this thing, this, everything I want to see. And the more I see, the more I crave. I continue like this. So, we basically need a direction. You know, Eknath Iswaranji, in his book, he nicely gives this example. It's a fascinating example. In Kerala, the streets are small. And you have a lot of elephants there, you know. And those elephants, when they are walking on the street, small streets, their trunk is swinging. And when the trunk is swinging, both the sides there are small shops selling all kinds of things, banana, bunch of bananas sold in Kerala. So the trunk, when it swings, grabs the bunch of banana from the shop and eats. Another time when it swings, this side grabs another bunch from the other shop and eats. So to control the elephant's trunk, the mahout, what does he do? He gives a stick. He gives a stick to the trunk. The moment the stick is given to the trunk becomes stable. It's not, oscillating. So, all of us need direction in life. And without direction, keep on going in different ways. Some people go to sightseeing, some people go to pilgrimages. And in fact, in Delhi, what happened? When we have retreats, you know, in this particular group, I don't think so I've gone for any retreat with you people. But in my other groups, we go to retreat once in a year. So when we go for retreats in the beginning, we have gone to a few places like Kasoli. They booked a hotel there 3 days or something. Then we did retreat there for 3 days. And then the next time they booked some other place. Then we went to Varanasi also. Like that. Slowly I found out these people do not want to come to the retreat if you go to the same place. Because for them, it is it's an excuse for them to sightsee. You know, there is nothing wrong if you want to sightsee or something, but some kind of excuse. The mind is still going outwardly without a sense of proper direction. So the moment we expose ourselves to Shastra, it gives us direction. It explains, you know, the four goals there for a human being. Basically, you're interested in wealth in the beginning. So, artha, then kama, entertainment. Then comes dharma. One day everybody has to die. So I rather live doing some karmic activities so that I get some punya when I go to heaven. So, artha, kama, dharma. So, it analyzes all these three. After analyzing all these three, you understand that all these three are temporary, passing, fleeting. Real goal is moksha. So, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. These three vis-a-vis moksha. Then once it explains all that, then you're convinced about that, then that becomes your goal. Otherwise, even artha, kama, dharma, it doesn't say it's wrong. So, even artha, if you want to gain and enjoy, how to do that, it explains. So, it gives you direction. That's why Vedanta is helpful and you need to get exposed to the knowledge when you are young. That's the only reason. No. Because the mind will go. Mind will go into this and that. Something new which I have not tried before, why not I try? It will go. I have never been to that place. So let me go to that place. I have never tasted this. Let me taste this. What is this? What is that? So mind is just interested, curious. So that mind requires a direction and that is given by the Shastra, Vedantic knowledge. So therefore, Upanishads say the highest goal is moksha and Upanishads talk about it. Ultimately, everybody needs to get liberated from this samsara, for that only knowledge helps. But since not everybody is evolved to come to the level of knowledge, you need to do karma, purify and come to that level, gain knowledge and realize. All other means are indirect, only jnanam is direct. That's what Adi Shankara says in Atma Bodha also. Pakasya vanni vajyanam ina mokshona chityate. Like for cooking, the direct means is fire. All other means of chopping the vegetables, you know, buying it from the shop, cleaning it, you know, chopping it, marinating it, all that is indirect. Finally, you need to cook it in fire. Similarly, karma, bhakti, all that indirect. Finally, direct knowledge. Knowledge is a direct means for liberation. So, goal. But the problem is, this sadhanas themselves we can get involved. You know, even to those sadhanas we should not get involved. That is very important. Because ultimately, why am I doing this sadhana? I am doing this sadhana to realize the self. To get to that goal. However, enjoyable the process may be, I should not get involved in it. That doesn't mean we are suggesting that while you are in the process, keep thinking about the goal. No. What we mean is, see, one is getting involved in the process. Other is, while you are in the process, you are result oriented, thinking of the result. We need to follow the in between, the middle path. What is that? Neither getting involved in the process, nor craving for the result while doing the process. But what you have to do? At the back of your mind, in your subconscious, you must keep the goal always. Why am I here? Huh? Why 10 years or 12 years, I don't know how long this class has been going on. Why did we come together? I know you all meet very often. You are all, most of you are related and some of you are friends. Been friends for a long time. And you said, okay, let's form a group and listen to the Shastra. So, you know, Mamtaji contacted me. That's how we started this class. So, what is the purpose for which we both came together? To study. Of course, we will enjoy our group, company, joke and all that. Fine. But, ultimately, purpose kya? What was the purpose for which we came? It's to get to that self. Understand the scriptures. Try and see to be a better human being. And then, ultimately, go to that height of realization. Without forgetting that we should go. But unfortunately what happens, many people don't even come to the path. Or then, like I said, kao piyo maja karo. Yeah, chod da yaar, all these things are necessary. We'll see all this if you have time after 60, post retirement. Itne jaldi kya? Why so soon? You know, that sort of a thing. So, one set of people don't even start. Other set of people start but get involved. And very rarely you find a person who doesn't get involved. So, he talks about all these three. One who doesn't start, meaning one who is fully worldly. Other fellow who starts but gets involved. The other fellows who start but doesn't get involved and consistently follows the path. What is that benefit? All this he discusses in 9, 10, 11. And the similar kinds of words and verses he repeats in 12, 13, 14 to emphasize this very point. Because this is very, very important. It's not enough if you start. Many people have started. Don't get involved and being consistently pursuing it till we reach, that's the challenge. And any time we find ourselves getting involved, falling down, we should understand that I should not fall like a lead plate. I should fall like a rubber ball. Okay, chalo, I fell down. No problem. I can rise back. I can still rise. I can continue rising to different heights of life. So this is the message in 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So various sadhanas are there. When you use the body, you call it karma. When you use the mind, you call it upasana. You know? And if upasana is, it is basically done by the mind. We call it as manasa vyapara. Means it's the activity at the mind level. Karma is more at the activity at the body level. Kayika and vachika karma. And then manasa upasana. So upasana is basically where you direct your thoughts to your Ishta Devata. The form worship. Saguna Ishvara Dhyanam is called upasana. Saguna Ishvara Dhyanam. Saguna means God with qualities, with gunas. Saguna Ishvara Dhyanam. Nirguna Ishvara means Brahman. It has no gunas, no qualities, no attributes. Now, this Saguna Ishvara Dhyanam, also many people do it with Kama. It's called Sakama Saguna Ishvara Dhyanam. So, I do certain upasanas. Upasanas are there, so I get power, you know. In fact, some of the upasanas, which we will see as we study, they call it Hiranyagarbha Upasana, Yakrita Upasana. This upasana apparently gives you Ashtamahasiddhi, you know. It will give you all those powers, like they call it as Anima, Garima, Mahima, you know, you can reduce yourself to smaller than the atom. You can increase yourself to different heights. All these kind of powers are there. But in Vedanta, they keep on repeating, saying that all these powers are still belonging to the realm of the mind. It's nothing to do with Brahman. Brahman is beyond all this. So you should not get involved in any of this. In fact, a person who is interested in Brahman will say no to this sadhanas. One should not get involved in these things, you know, unnecessarily. All these powers. If at all there can be some power that will help me to get to Brahman, I am interested in. See, this is what we call as, you know, yoga balam, artha balam, dhana balam, tapo balam, jnana balam. What is all this? There is a certain balam you get by doing yoga practices. There is a certain balam you get if you have some wealth. There are certain balam you get if you have been doing tapasya. You know, you've been controlling and regulating your contacts. And if you continuously practice this, you will get some balam. So tapo balam. Shastra balam. If you study the scriptures and all, you get shastra balam. So all these balams, very good. Why not? If all these enough balams we can get, Why not? But those balams, by the way, what is the use? Somebody has Shastra Balam. See, there's a very interesting story. There was a pandit who had to go to the other side of the river in his village. So he boarded a small boat. And the boatman was sitting on this side. This pandit will go and sit the other side because he doesn't want to sit next to the boatman, the ferryman. So he asks, he's a very proud fellow, that is educated, that is got the Shastra Balam. So he used to go on talking about, he had pride in his thing, so he used to talk like ego, arrogance. He was not really humble. So he asked this ferryman, hey, have you studied this? Well, some scripture, he said. He said, what are you talking about? I didn't study anything. I have not studied this. Oh, quarter of your life you wasted. Okay, have you studied that? No. That also I didn't study. Okay, another half, another quarter gone. So half of your life you wasted. Then something else you ask, he said, I don't know. So 3/4 of your life is wasted. That's what the pandit was saying. By the time the boat developed a small hole and the water started coming in and the boat is sinking now. So this ferryman simply jumped into the water and he was swimming. He looked at this pandit and said, do you know swimming? He said, no, I don't know swimming. He said, all your life you wasted. See, in other words, what we need to understand is, per se, all these have balam. But these balams are all nothing in front of Atma. So all these balams should help us to get to that strength, which is a strength of not relying on anything. When we reach the Atma, we attain that absolute independence. That's why even in the Bhagavad Gita, Shri Krishna says, Phalam Bhalavatam Asmi Kama Raga Vibhajita. I am that phalam. What kind of phalam? Kama Raga Vibhajita. There should be no Kama or Raga. Raga, Dvesha, all these attachments, desires, without that. And a person is without any attachment or desire. He is in absolute power. And nothing in the world can tempt that self. So he says, Balam Balavatamasmi Kama Raga Vivarchitam. Without Kama and Raga. Kama Raga means all the modifications of desires. Desire and its modification. That's what it means. So therefore, karma, you do it with your body, your hands, your organ of speech. Jhanam, you do with your mind. And they all give you some balam. But one should not get involved in them. Once you get involved in them, that's it, gone. You are not using them to get to the highest. Somewhere down the line, all of us settle, isn't it? Because our thinking is that much only. See, what is there? The chicken. Chicken can fly up to a height. It goes up, can't stay flying for long, comes down. Peacock can fly, but peacock's range is also different. Pigeon can fly. And then eagle also flies. So each one, though they can fly, each one's height is different, capacity is different. So we need to use all this to fly like an eagle, high in the sky, where you become absolutely independent and free. So for that, you need to understand all this. So the Shastras explain. See, how does the Shastra help us? We say Shastra itself means teach and protect. That's what Shastra means. Shastra means teach and protect. So it teaches all this. This is the benefit of this. This is the benefit of this. If you do both, this is the benefit. But then ultimately there is another benefit, which is the highest. So how to get to that? This is what the Shastra explains. That is why we need to study all these things and then live our life according to Shastra. That's why we say in our country, it's a great country because of this reason, not for any other reason. Because there is Shastra to guide. How many of us really get exposed to the Shastras and guide us? Hardly anybody actually. We come to Shastra after we have all been misguided in life and wasted our energy. After 60, 65, suddenly we get interest in all this. But ideally speaking, we should have taken the guidance of the Shastra through the Guru when we were small. But anyway, better late than never. So this is what this next set of verses talks about. So now let's go to verse number 9.
अंधं तमः प्रविशन्ति ये विद्यामुपासते ततो भूय इव ते तमोय उभिव्याया गुरथाः
प्रविशन्ति ये विद्या उपासते अंधं तमः means अंधं means darkness. Andam, blinding, tamaha, darkness, blinding darkness. Andam, tamah, pravishanti. They go to blinding darkness. Who? Ye. Avidya. Avidya means ignorance. Those who worship avidya, ignorance, enter into blinding darkness. So if you are not somebody who is exposed to the Vedic knowledge, basically Vedas. Veda means knowledge. If you are not educated in the Vedas, what will you be doing? You will only be going by your perceptions. You only know this. You don't know anything else. See, only when we go to school, our brain starts thinking about many other factors. So as the brain starts thinking about many other factors, in school we learn many more. And then we are capable of conceiving things which we can't see also. Isn't it? They start talking about atoms, subatomic particles and that which you can't see. But they are able to think and discuss those things. So, avidya means one who has not gone through the knowledge of the scriptures. So, that fellow, what will he be involved in? Be involved in the world. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. So, a person who is ajnani, avidya, ignorant, enters blinding darkness. Blinding darkness means he vishaya sukham. He is only involved in vishaya sukham. This vishaya sukham, what it does is, it keeps binding you to that again and again. And you don't know anything beyond it. So you are in darkness as it were, with reference to the higher realms of the life. You know, here's the self-realization. So those who worship avidya, ignorance, enter into blinding darkness. Then he says, but those who revel in vidya, vidyayagum ratha means those who revel in vidya. Vidya means what? The Vedic injunctions. What is that? The sadhanas, the disciplines. So he says, but those who revel in vidya, knowledge, enter as it were into greater darkness than that. Because the subtle joys and pleasures that you get from the following of sadhanas, the process, is what I was saying in the beginning. The process, the means itself gives you a tremendous joy. See, when we control our senses and practice sadhana, We live a healthy life. That very health gives you some kind of a joy. You conceive it from the opposite. And you don't follow those disciplines. You ate so much of chili and all those kind of things. And it goes and disturbs your stomach. And you're feeling a little uncomfortable. Instead, when you follow those disciplines, it gives you, health, and that gives you happiness. So there are people who get stuck to this. In fact, this is also discussed in the Gita. The sattvic person is bound to sukham. So, what kind of sukham? This is what, these kind of sukham, health, knowledge, when you get clarity in life, you literally feel that you are flying in the aircraft, others are all going in the car, or not even car, bullet car. So, you say sattvic people are bound to happiness and knowledge, it is in the Bhagavad Gita. So similarly here he says, those who revel in Vidya enter as it were into greater darkness and death. So what happens is they will be stuck only to that. Nothing else. You know, health, information, and so many other sattvic aspects. They will be involved in that. They lose the purpose of liberation. So he says, that people, those set of people are into blinding darkness. You know, see, if you are not able to fight the pleasures of the material world, you will not be able to fight the pleasures of this subtle spiritual world. In fact, little power you get. See, this itself, I am giving this as an example now. Now, we are in this Vedanta teaching, lifestyle. So what happens is, so many people from different background come to us. Each one is some, owner of this company, or this minister, this politician, something or the other, some administrator, IAS officer, sometimes you will find a director of a big government organization coming and sitting and listening to your lecture. You know, all those kind of people come. I'm just giving this as an example. So when you are teaching and you have these contacts, it's a different thing altogether, you know, power that you wield. So you may get tempted and get involved. You should not, rather, but it's difficult. Very difficult. So therefore, the more and more spiritual sadhanas we start doing, the subtler joys and pleasures we get. And there's a danger of getting involved in all this. Sometimes you may even develop some power. Even a simple thing like the ability to focus. Forget everything. Just the ability to sit in one place for 1 hour. You have no idea how much power it gives you. Now people who have been attending classes, they are all finding it slightly easier for them to sit in the house during this corona time. Because they are used to that. They come to, only thing is, their conditioning is there. So what? Some class or some lecture or something they have to listen. They are able to sit in one place. Other fellows, they can't sit in one place. They can't listen to any lecture. They just wait for the lockdown to be opened up so that they can run around. They're just literally frustrated. And many people are frustrated. Many times what happens is we get these videos, you know, WhatsApp and all that. Somebody was talking to the police and they ventured out during lockdown. And then they yelled at the police officers. And then those videos they show, and then the police officers have filed the FIR against them. And I think interesting for us to see. But what we need to see from the other angle is, everybody is frustrated. You know, police people, they had to work more than their office timings. Almost 24 hours a day, hardly sleep, police personnel. Even doctors, when you hear some of the doctors talking about it, it's terrible. There's somebody whom we know here in Chennai. He is, I believe, working for 2 continuous weeks, no proper timing and all. Hardly he gets time to sleep. And then 2 weeks again quarantine, or 1 week quarantine, something like that. It's how their routine is. So when the doctor comes home and something, silly things happen at home, let's say. Then maybe not that the wife or somebody did it purposely. He loses because he's frustrated. Everybody is going through this. So when you're driving and going, the police fellow stops and he says, you're not wearing the mask. You start arguing. You would probably not do it in a normal time. Everybody is extremely, extremely frustrated. So that's why I'm saying, when you have been attending these classes, you've developed the capacity to sit in one place for 1 hour. You have enough strength. Not easy. So all these kind of strengths and benefits that you've got, you should be able to turn it towards the self. But majority of us get involved. And the moment you get involved, it is another kind of a maja. And it's like drugs, you know. It's too much. Not easy. Not at all easy. So, a lot of people get involved in the Siddhi powers. During Swami Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's lifetime, you know, when you go to Calcutta, it's a beautiful ashram they have, Ramakrishna Mission. There's a Hubli River. You go to cross the river and go the other side. This side is Dakshineshwar temple where Ramakrishna, Swami Ramakrishna was, doing puja and all. Then, to go to that ashram, you got to cross the river and go by boat. So, a lot of people came to visit Swami Ramakrishna. So, they used to cross the river by boat and come. Once it happened that there was a guy who was demonstrating that he could walk on water. He was demonstrating on that water that he could walk. A tremendous gathering was. This Ramakrishna, so that he just ignored. But some devotee said, no, you have to come with us, and they took him one day. When he went there, he saw that guy walking on the water. And that guy also said, this is Ramakrishna who has come to see him. So he is having that pride, you know. And so Ramakrishna asked him, I am to take after this power to walk on water. He says, 25 years. He says, it took me about 25 years to master this power. He says, I just spent 25 paisa, just 25 paisa to cross the river. Because you give 25 paisa those days, now I don't know much it is. 25 paisa, you go to the ferryman, he takes you across in the boat. So, what Ramakrishna is trying to say is, no doubt you developed this power with so much of sadhana for 25 years. But what is it doing? It is just making you walk on this water. It's not helping you walk on these samsaric waters. You know, the samsaric ocean. It's not helping. What you can do with this power? Maximum people will come and see you. They'll give you money. That what you do? You buy stuff which you can eat. You buy stuff with which you can sleep. You cannot free yourself from this samsara. So it's a useless thing. So the moment you get involved in the worldly joys, it is darkness. But if you get involved in spiritual practices, it is much more greater darkness. That's why he says, Andam tamap pravishanti evitya upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo yau vidyayahum rataha. So he says, those people who are involved in the spiritual or Vedas, Vidya, knowledge, they enter as it were into greater darkness. Bhuya eva, as it were greater darkness. Because once a person starts enjoying all this, very difficult for him to get rid of the samsara. Because see, dukme simaran sabukare sukume kare na koi. In dukh, you will immediately think of Bhagwan. During Corona time, a lot of people started thinking of Bhagwan. But once the problem, everything gets settled, you forget about Bhagwan. You say, Bhagwan doesn't need my company. He's got the capacity to stay alone. Now I've got so many things to do, let me go. But things are not conducive. You will think of Brahman, Atman, God. Sabka time hai. So therefore, it is dangerous. It is much more dangerous. It keeps you in darkness for a longer period. So at least the worldly fellow, the happiness he enjoys is very, very temporary, and then he will go through the knocks and shocks, and somehow he will get some idea to get to the absolute. But the fellow who is involved in these things is a little longer, qualitatively superior happiness. So therefore, it is greater darkness. They just want to caution us by doing ninda. Ninda means by condemning. By condemning all this, their main idea is not to condemn this. Their main idea is to praise that who those people who pursue this not as an end in itself, but to get to that goal. So to praise those people and the practice of knowledge in the true sense of the term, to praise that, we are doing criticism on these things. Criticism of wrong practice. You know, which is important. You should know that these are all wrong practices, and therefore by criticizing that, their idea is not to put that practices down. Their idea is to elevate your mind to different heights. See, a guru is only interested in our evolution. Nothing else. There's nothing else a guru is interested in. No, you're not interested in anything else. So, when there's a very interesting story, there was a Swami, a great renunciator. He had nothing for his possession. Even begging bowl, apparently he didn't have. But this Swami had tremendous following and all the top people in all walks of life, his devotees. Used to come early, take his blessings and go. So once, and not once, every time anybody comes and takes his blessing and goes, he gives them blessings and everything, but then he'll say, give me 1 rupee. Give me 1 rupee. Some of the devotees said, hey, this Swami is not interested in money, we know that. The way he leads, the simple life itself is a proof for that. But yet, every time you go to him, take his blessing and say, give me 1 rupee, give me 1 rupee. What is it? The Swami wants 1 rupee. If he wants and if he asks in crores also, the devotees will give. But he doesn't ask in crores or not. They'll say, give me 1 rupee, 1 rupee. So once a fellow asks Swami, what is this? This is something very strange with you. You know very well that you are a very, very simple person. But then what is this every time I say, give me 1 rupee, give me 1 rupee. Why is he asking that 1 rupee? Interested in your money? Not at all interested in your money. But by making you a giver, he wants you to evolve. He wants you to enjoy subtler joys of life. The joy of life is in giving. There's no joy in taking. There's no joy in taking. See, the mind which is of a taker, who may be in the garb of giver in the world, always the guru. Very difficult. He wants money. See, what is this? He's become a sannyasi, but he's still interested in money. You have value for it. So what is happening is, every starting something of their own. So the learning to part and share and renounce is for your evolution. When you hold, you don't evolve. When you let go, you evolve. So the guru is interested in making you evolve. That's what the story is telling by taking the 1 rupee. With 1 rupee, what will he do? He'll do nothing. And even whatever he collected, he does for some work and that's it. So it is for your evolution. Tena tyaktena bunjitaha. May you renounce and enjoy. What we studied, no? The very first mantra of Visavasya Upanishad, what did it say? May you renounce. You should be able to part, not hoard. So in spirituality, the guru is only interested in that. So therefore, when we analyze, we can say there are people who are takers in the garb of givers. There is some conditioning they put. I'll give you this. You name this building in this name. I'll give you this. You do this in this name. That name. Truly speaking, when you give, there should be no demands or no expectations. And you should understand that through you, the Bhagavan is giving. Actually, who is giving is your, not you. Bhagavan is giving through you. So you'll be happy that he's chosen you to be the giver. You are only the conduit. You're not the giver. So this is what that guru wanted to teach. So even though he was a taker apparently externally, he was a giver. But there are people who are givers apparently, but they are takers. They're takers. A lot of people, see, why do they give? They give because they get some benefit. Giving for the sake of giving. Hardly anybody. So this Swami used to therefore take the 1 rupee from them to make them evolve. So this verses, by criticizing the worldly routine mechanical existence of pursuing the worldly pursuits or getting involved in the sadhana, though it appears like very powerful words to criticize, it is basically wanting to praise that person or people who don't get involved, who don't get involved, who does their sadhana, karma, bhakti, chan, and then they proceed. So in the next mantra, he says, the result that accrues from this avidya is different. The result that accrues from vidya is different. And what that result, he doesn't say. He only says they are different. So you should know. In fact, in Tamil we have a scripture text called Tirukkural. In that he says, Karka, Kasadara, Karpavai, Katrapin, Nirka, Adarka, Taga. Means what? Karka means learn. Karpavai, what has to be learned? Katrapin, having learned. Nirka, Adarka, Taga means you should live according to that knowledge, as per that knowledge. You should live wisely. So here, what is it? The thing I wanted to say is, you should learn. What you should learn? What has to be learned? Karpavai should be learned. Not all nonsense. You go to the beauty parlor, star dust and this and that. You know, you go for hair cutting, you go sit there, you know, star dust is there. And then all kinds of gossip, everything you read. That is not karpavai. That is not something that you should learn. In fact, better, you are better if you don't learn. How does it matter if the Salman Khan is going to get married at all? I'm not getting married. But our mind wants to learn all that. So therefore, karpavai, what you have to learn, you learn. And then live according to that. So here also, you learn these shastras and put them into practice in the proper way, then their benefit is different. If not, the benefit is something else. So what it is, we'll see next week. Conclude the class.
Om Purnamadha Purnamidam Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyerva Vidyatmanava Sakrute Swabhava Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayanayeti Samarpayami.